Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Tetzayin Amud Bet. The Mishnah said, Sanhedrin Gedola Haita, and we saw there was a machloket there between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether the members of the Sanhedrin Gedola equaled 70 or whether they equaled 71. The question really revolved about Moshe Rabbeinu, whether Moshe Rabbeinu was counted as one and therefore with 71. Or it was the 70 that are mentioned in Parshat Balotcha. So as we noted in the Mishnah and the introduction to the Masechta, that Parshat Balotcha is the paradigm for the Sanhedrin Agdolah, and therefore the Machloket revolves around how to interpret the Parshia in Balotcha, where Moshe asks Hashem for help in the leadership position, and then Hashem provides it with these additional Shivim Zikenim. So the Parshat Balotcha says, "Vayom Hashem Moshe Esfali Shivim Ish Mizikne Israel Sheedata Gimhei Zikne Am Bishotrav V'Lakachta Utam El O Moed B'Tiatzvu Sham Imach V'Yaradti V'Dibarti Mecha Sham V'Tzalti Min Haruach Asher Lecha V'Samti Alehem V'Nasu Itecha B'Masa Am Lo Tisa Ata B'Vadecha." So here is the instruction. There are two things that are going on there. One is the issue of the Slav and them asking for the meat. And the other one is Moshe asking for help in dealing with the people. So Hashem responds to Moshe's request for help with the Sukkim that we just read, that they're going to be Shivim Ish, Mizikne Israel, that you're going to choose. And then they're going to work with you in order to deal with the leadership of the people. And also Hashem says, "Atzalti min ruach hashalecha." Some of that spirit, some of that ruach hakodesh that's on you, I'm going to place unto them. And therefore I'm going to help you carry the burden of the nation, and you will not have to carry it alone. Now here's the machloke between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to how to interpret those psukim. My time at the Rabbanon, what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanon that it's 71? The Amrei u'Moshe al gabehen. There's 70 here, Shivim Ish. Plus Moshe Rabbeinu sits on top of them, and Amar Kra, the pasuk says, "Beityatzvu sham imach," that they will be together with you. The implications of imach is that not only would they be there, but also you will be there. Imach ba'at va'adayu, you along with them, mean that you're together with them. Yehuda Amar imach mishum shchina, that they'll be together with you because of the shchina. They needed hashrat shchina. The only way to have hashrat shchina is with Moshe Rabbeinu being present. Without Moshe Rabbeinu's presence, there wouldn't be any Hashrat Hashchina. So imach is not because you are together with them to constitute the Sanhedrin Agdolah of 71. Rather, you need to be there for the Ruach HaKodesh aspect of it, but not to be a part and parcel of the Sanhedrin Agdolah. That's one way Rashi interprets it. The other way Rashi interprets it is that they will stand Michutz to Ol Moed. They can't enter the Ol Moed because of the Shechina that's there, though Moshe could enter the Ol Moed because the Shechina is there. So therefore, they'll be together with you because you're the only one who can enter into the Ol Moed. Rabbanan Amar Kara, the Pasuk says, "Benasu Yitcha B'Masa Ha'am." So we have another Pasuk that teaches us that, which is that they will carry the burden of the nation with you. Itcha at behadayu, and you will be with them. So again, if you agree with Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation of the previous pasuk, which is that the imach is not coming to teach you that you are together with them, but rather to teach you about the Ashrat Ashrina, or the fact that Moshe enters into the Ol Moed, then I have another pasuk which says, "Benasu itcha," that they will carry that burden along with you. With you implies that you are amongst them, or you together constitute the body that will take care of Bnei Yisrael. So then, Rabbi Yehuda, itcha bedomim lecha. Itcha doesn't come to teach you about the fact that Moshe was a part and parcel of the Sanhedrin Agdolah, but rather to teach you that the members of the Sanhedrin Agdolah have to be similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. And here Rashi says, bedomim lecha is miyuchasim umnukim imum, that they have to have yichus, and they have to be free of any blemishes. Here from Rashi, it seems to be that physical features of these members of the Sanhedrin. V'rabbanan, learn that out. Me'me'akel alecha v'nasui itach nafko. That they learn from the pasuk in Shmot, where Yitro is giving advice to Moshe, and says that you would appoint these smaller courts in order to me'akel alecha, that they will lighten your burden, v'nasui itach, and then they will carry the burden along with you. So they learn it out from there, that they have to be domim lecha, v'yalfa misanhedre gedola misanhedre ktana. And just like the smaller Sanhedrin that are mentioned in Shmot have that requirement, certainly then the Sanhedre gedola would have that same requirement to be domim lecha, that they have to be similar to you. So the tach, they learn already from Shmot, and then they extrapolate that from the Sanhedrin Ktana to the Sanhedrin gedola. But Rabbi Yehuda learns it directly from the itcha over here, and therefore he doesn't have the itcha available to teach you that Moshe is together with the 70 to constitute a Sanhedrin Agdolah of 71. So now that's the beginning of that Parshia. At the end of the Parshia, when it actually comes to fruition, it says that, "Vayetze Moshe, וידבר על העם את דברי השם, ואסוף 70 איש מזקני העם, ועמיד אותם סביבת אוהל. וירד השם בענן, וידבר אליו, ויצל מן הרוח אשר לו, ויתן על 70 איש הזקנים, ויתנוח עליהם הרוח, ויתנבאו, ולא יספו. וישארו שני אנשים במחנה, שם האחד אלדד, שם השני מידד, ותנח עליהם הרוח, והם הבכתובים, ולא יצאו האוהלה, ויתנבאו במחנה. וירץ הנער, ויגד למשה, ויאמר, אלדד ומידד מתנבאים במחנה, ויען יהושע בן נון, משרת משה מבחורה, ויאמר, אדוני, משה, כלאים, ויאמר למשה, המקנה אתה לי, ומי ייתן כל עם השם נביאים, כי ייתן השם את רוחו עליהם. That's the end of that story where it actually comes to fruition. And there are a number of features of the story which the Gemara is now going to discuss, including how did you pick 70, who are Eldad and Medad, and then what's the difference between the Nivu'ah of the other members and that of Eldad and Medad, and then what was the issue that Yoshua got upset about that he told Moshe to be Kala'im. There were two individuals who remained in the Machaneh. This is referring to Eldad Umeidad. Yeshamim Bekalpi Nishtairu. Some say that they were left inside of the lottery. Shibishasha Marlo Akosh Baruch Hu Moshe Fali Shivim Ish Mizikne Yisrael. Shem says to Moshe, gather for me 70 individuals who will constitute the Sanhedrin Agdola. Gather them together for me. Moshe, Ketzere Aseh. How can I put this together? If Rosh Hashanah Mikol Shevet V'Shevet, if I take 6 from each Shevet, Nimzu Shnayim Yeterim. 6 times 12 is 72, and he needs 70, so he's going to have 2 in excess. If Rosh Hamisha Hamisha Mikol Shevet, if I take 5 from each Shevet, Nimzu Asarach Hasirim. 5 times 12 is 60, and he needs 70, he's going to be short 10. If Rosh Hashanah Mishevet Zeh V'Chamisha Mishevet Zeh, so I'll take 6 from this Shevet, 5 from that Shevet, and then I'll end up with 70, Areni Matil Kin'ah Ben HaShvatim. And I'm going to cause there to be jealousy between the Shvatim, or discontent between the Shvatim, because they're going to say it's unfair. Why did that Shevet get 6, and we only got 5? Masa, Birer Shisha Shisha. He went ahead and chose 6 from every Shevet, which is a total of 72. Bevi Shivim Ushnayim Pitkim. He brought 72 ballots that he put into the lot. Al Shivim Katav Zakein. On 70 name, it was written Zakein, meaning that they would qualify as the Shivim Zakeinim. Ushnayim Eniyah Chalak. And 2 of them he left blank. Balalan. He mixed them up. Venatnan Bekalpi. And then he put them into the box, the lottery box. Malahem Bo Tlu Pitkechem. He said, then each one of you come and pick out your lot from here, or pick out your ballot. Kol mishalav yado zakein. Anybody who picked out the word zakein, amar kvar kidashcha shamayim. You were already sanctified or chosen by heaven. Mishalav yado chalak, the ones who got those blank ones, amar makom lo chafetz b'cha. That Hashem is not interested in you, or he's not chosen you for this job. Ani ma'aseh lecha. What can I do? If Hashem doesn't want you, then I can't override Hashem's will. And that's how they ended up with the 70 Zikainim, even though there were going to be 2 Shvatim that were actually short in the representation in the Shivim Zikainim. But we did it in the fairest way possible, which was to make it a random lottery where they would pick out of the lot. Obviously, the lots are not random because it's dictated by Hashem, but it's the idea of making it the fairest way to pick out and demonstrate that it's Hashem who's making the decision, because it's out of our control when it's put in the ballots into the lottery box. And therefore, this was as if Hashem had chosen these 70 out of the 72 that were nominated for these positions. Yosei b'davar ata omer. So similarly, we have this. V'lakachta chameshet chameshet shkalim legulgolet. It says that every bechor has to redeem themselves with a payment of 5 shekel. Ama Moshe ketzad easeh lehen, Yisrael. What am I going to do to make this work? Imam arlo ten li pidyon tcha. If he says to any bechor, pay up so that you are redeemed, mitzei, and then you'll be released of that kedusha. He said, I was exchanged for a Ben Levi. So Ma'asa. So what did he do? The problem is that we have 22,000 Levim, and we have 22,273 Bechorim. So 22,000 of the Levim can redeem the other 22,000 of the Bechorim. But there's 273 Bechorim that are in excess of the number of the Levim. And those 273 are going to have to pay 5 shekel to redeem themselves. But again, if you take the 22,273, nobody's going to volunteer to pay the money. They're all going to say, well, we were redeemed by a Levi. So how did he deal with this? If he esrim ushnayim alafim pitkin, he brought 22,000 lots, katav aleihem ben Levi, and he wrote ben Levi on the 22,000, v'al shlosha v'shivim u'matayim, on the remaining 273, katav aleihem chamisha shkalim. He wrote that 5 shekel. Balalan, he mixed them up. Venatan Bakalpi put them into the lottery box. Amalem Tlu Pitkechem, take your lots. Mishalab Yado Ben Levi, the one who picked out Ben Levi, Amarlo, Farpadacha Ben Levi, you're already redeemed. Mishalab Yado Chameshit Shkalim, Amarlo, 10 Pidyon Chav, it's a pay up and you will be released of your Kedusha. So again here, they use the lottery to figure out who was the party that was obligated, meaning to pay the 5 shekel, or in our case, who was the party that was not going to be amongst the Shevim Zekenim. On the other side, who were the parties that were redeemed by the Levi, or in our case, who were the 70 that were going to be a part of the Zekenim, or the Sanhedrin HaGedolah. So Moshe does it through the lottery system, and again, the lottery plays a huge role, both in Tanakh, we see that numerous times throughout Tanakh, but also conceptually, even within the Gemara and the Avodah and the Mikdash, the lottery was seen as the fairest way to come to a conclusion about what God's will was. So the lottery was seen as the most random way to pick things, but obviously we don't believe in Mikra or in randomness. We believe that Hashem guides things. So how do we have Hashem's guidance without human intervention? We do it by having this blind lottery or this blind picking of lots, because in that way there's no human intervention as to whom is picked, but there is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will being expressed through the lottery. So Eldad and Medad are those two that were left in the lottery. I mean, they're the one that drew the blank lots over there. So even though they were Ra'oi and they were nominated to be one of the 70 Zikenim, nevertheless, because the lottery fell out that they were not chosen, that's why they were not included. And that's what it means they were left over in the Kalpi. On a more positive note, we have the view of Rabbi Shimon Omer, B'machane Nishtairu, they remained in the camp. B'shasha Amarlo Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, Esfale Shimim Ish. Amru Eldad Umedad, Einanu Re'uim Lotad B'dula. So they were amongst those that were picked. But they said, we're not worthy, we're not really up for this job. And therefore they refused to go out with the others of Kenim. They remained in the Machane. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Mi'atechem Etzmechem. Since you were humble and you belittled yourselves, therefore I'm going to make you greater than the other Zekenim that were chosen. So what did he give them in excess of the other Zekenim? Other Nevi'im, or the Nevi'im, the Shivim Zekenim, here are 68 of them, they were mitnabe, they had nevuah, they had prophecy, upasku, and then they stopped. On the other hand, Eldad Medad got nevuah, and then continued to have nevuah. It did not stop. Uma nevuah nitnabu. And what exactly was the prophecy that they were prophesying about? Amru, Moshe mate, Yoshua machnisit Yisrael aretz. Moshe is gonna die, and Yoshua is gonna lead Bnei Yisrael into the land. Remember, this is pre-Chet HaMeraglim. That was a nevuah, that was predictive in nature, and that's why, we're gonna see in a second, Yoshua bin Nun is upset about what they're saying. Rabbi Chanin amar mishum Rabbi Eliezer, they had a nevuah about the slav, which is the intertwined sugya over there in the parshia, is Moshe is speaking about two things with Hashem. First of all, providing the meat for the people. And number two is lightening his burden because he can't deal with the people anymore. So Hashem's response is about both. He gives him the shivim zekenim and he also is going to bring the slav. So because the issues are together, in a sense now we're conflating the issues and saying the nevuah that they had related to the Slav, which is Alei Slav, Alei Slav, that the Slav should come, meaning that they were predicting how this meat issue was going to be solved, which was the coming of the Slav. Nachman Amar Iskei Gogu Magog, Ayu Mitna'abim, they actually had nevuah about the future, meaning not just about the near future, but the far future, which is the issues of Gogu Magog, which is the Geula Latida Lavo. Shinamar, Koma Hashem Elukim, Atahu Asher Dibarti B'yamim Kadmonim, you're the ones who spoke up in the early days. B'yad avadai nivi'ei Yisrael, my servants, the prophets of Israel, hanibaim b'yamim ha'im, shanim, that were prophesying at that time for many years, la'vi otcha alehem, that I would bring you against them. So over there, the pasuk says, shanim. Al tikri shanim elashnayim. Don't say shanim years, but rather, Shnayim two. Beizuen Shnayim Nevi'im Shnitnabu B'Perek Achad Nevuachat. When was there a situation in which we had two Nevi'im that prophesied at the same time a similar Nevuah? Now this is an important principle in general, which is that we do not have in Navi two Nevi'im that get the same Nevuah. Every Navi that receives a Nevuah is very personal, and every Nevuah is distinct and separate. So the fact that a Navi gets the exact same nevuah as another Navi is almost a proof that his nevuah is not true, because that shouldn't be the case. Hashem does not appear or give prophecy to two Nevi'im with the exact same message or the exact same dream or mashal. There are instances where we do have nevuot that are almost identical. Like, for instance, the nevuah in Micha, Perek Dalet, of Lo Yisa Goy El Goy Cherev, Velo Yimadu Od Milchama, which also appears in Yishayahu, Perek Bet. So we do have nevuot like that that do overlap, and those are questions. But in general, the principle we laid out here is that you do not have Nevi'im having the same nevuah. Avi Omer, Eldad Meidad. So that would make this case by Eldad Meidad an exception, because they had a nevuah achat. So the example of two Nevi'im that were prophesying at the exact same time about the exact same topic, we only had one instance of that in history, and that was Eldad Meidad. And therefore the Shnayim, if you read it instead of Shanim, would reference to Eldad Meidad. And there, the Psukim and Yechezkel are speaking about Latid Avo with Gog and Magog. And so, if you then ascribe that to the earlier Nevi'im, as the Pasuk says, that were Shnayim, that were two, that refers to Eldad and Medad. So that's the third opinion as to what they were testifying about. And the Marsho over here says that the common denominator between all the opinions here about what was the Nevuah stems from the fact that they were mitnavim b'machaneh, that they were in the machaneh. The question is, what does it have to do with the machaneh? Does it have to do with the leadership of the machaneh? Does it have to do with the slav coming to the machaneh? Or does it have to do with some exogenous machaneh, like the machaneh of Gog u'Magog? Amar mar, konevim kulam nitnabu pasku, vein nitnabu velo pasku. The difference between the others was that they had nevuah and it stopped, and they had nevuah and it did not stop. Minalan de pasku. How do you know that the other zkenim's nevuah terminated? If you say, because the pasuk says, "Ve'na'abu v'lo yasafu," by the Shivim Zikinim it says that they had nevuah v'lo yasafu. You could read it, "lo yasafu" means that they did not continue, they did not end. Or it could mean "v'lo yasafu" means that they did not stop. So that's the question about how to read it. So now if you're going to read it, "Ve'na'abu v'lo yasafu," means that they had nevuah and they had no more after that. They added on no more nevuah after that. On the other hand, the Eldad Meidad, they had nevuah and they did not stop. What are you going to do about by Har Sinai, where it says that the voice of Hashem, or the sound of Hashem's voice, was a kol gadol, was a great sound, a great voice, velo yasaf. So now how are you going to read lo yasaf over here? If you're reading velo yasafu by the Nevi'im, that means that they did not continue, or they did not get any more. Is that how you're going to explain Hashem's voice? It was a kol gadol, velo yasaf, and it didn't continue? Doesn't make any sense. Hachanami delo sifo? You're going to say over there, it means it didn't add on, it didn't get stronger? That doesn't make sense. Hashem's voice is eternal. Hashem's voice bounds without any stopping, without any reduction in the volume. Ella delo pasak. What you have to say is that the pasuk with regards to Har Sinai, when it says kol gadol v'liyasaf, means delo pasak, it never stopped. If that's the case, then when it says by the nevi'im, by nabu v'liyasafu, makes it sound like velo pasak, they didn't stop. So that would be the opposite of what we've been saying until now. Elohach k'tiv. It says, Vayina'abu, hatam k'tiv, mitna'abim, adayin mitna'abim. So when it describes their nevuah, the tense and the context in which it is written, makes it sound like one of them was in the past tense, and the other one was in the present tense. That is when it says the Vayitain al shivim ish zkenim, Vayikinoach aleim aruach, Vayina'abu v'lo yasafu. That'd be by the other Zikainim. On the other hand, Eldad u'Meidad, and we're in the Machaneh, it says, Vayishu shnei anashim b'machaneh, shem echad Eldad v'shem eshini Meidad, v'tanach aleim aruach v'heima b'ktubim v'lo yatsu a'ila v'itna'abu b'machaneh. And then it says, Vayirat anar v'yed Moshe v'yem Eldad u'Meidad mitna'bi'im b'machaneh. So not only do they have the v'itna'abu of the other Zikainim, which is that they had nevuah, but then it says they continued after that point via mitna'abim, that they are actually continuing to have nevuah. So not only did they have nevuah in the past like the others, but mitna'abim, that they continue to have nevuah, and that's why the Nar runs to tell Moshe and Yeshua about the situation. So that would explain the difference in the nevuah, that their nevuah continued, whereas the others, their nevuah stopped. Bishlon amand amar Moshe mate, hainu dichtiv, if the nevuah that they were having was that Moshe is going to die and Yeshua is going to carry them into Eretz, then we understand why it says, Adoni Moshe Kalim. Why Yeshua is upset for Moshe and he says to Moshe, stop them. Elalamad amar hanach tarte. The other two options for nevuah, which either was the Slav or Gog and Magog, my Adoni Moshe Kalim. Why would you say Moshe stopped their nevuah? Their nevuah is not offensive. why would you tell Moshe to stop or terminate their nevuah? It says, Delav Orach Ara, Davalei Ketalmid Amare Alacha Lifnei Rabo, that it was not appropriate because it's the equivalent of a Talmud giving a psak in front of his Rebbe. Because here the younger Nevi'im, or the Nevi'im that are below Moshe, are giving nevuah. They are having prophecy in front of Moshe, or while in Moshe's presence. And that would be inappropriate because the only one should be the head Navi, or the king of the Nevi'im should be the one giving the nevuah, not the youngsters or his proteges. According to one who says the other two types of nevuah, which is Gog and Magog, the Slav, that's when Moshe says back, Mi'itain. Moshe says back to Yoshua, what are you getting upset about? I wish everybody was a Navi. Mi'itain, called Am Hashem Nevi'im. Ki'itain Hashem Ruchalehem. The whole nation should be Nevi'im. That would solve all our problems. Everybody could be a Navi. Then we wouldn't need any leaders. Everybody would be self-sufficient. Elamandamar Moshe mate. Mina chava nechale? Why would he say, Mi'itain Hashem, Hashem should make them all Nevi'im? And now it's speaking out Moshe Rabbeinu in a negative sense. Why do you respond in a way that seems to positively reinforce the nevuah, or say that the nevuah is a good thing? Marcez lo saimu kameh. They didn't end the whole sentence in front of him, meaning that he heard a part of the nevuah, but he didn't hear what exactly they had said, so therefore he didn't know the content of what they had said, or he didn't realize that they had said something negative about Moshe, that he was going to die, and then he wouldn't necessarily have reinforced it. Maikla aim. What does it mean that Yeshua says to Moshe, finish them off? The word kla'im is interesting because we have it by kil'ayim and we also have it by Noach. By the Mabul, it says vayikale. Again, by the Mishkan, it also says there vayikale. So it seems to be that the word kla'im or vayikale means to stop. It means to define or delineate and stop. So also here, my kla'im. Kla'im sounds like it means to stop or to create delineation or break over here. How does Moshe do that? Let them work for the tzibur, and they'll stop having nevuah from themselves. Meaning that if you burden them with the burdens of the tzibur, like they're supposed to take on, then their prophecy will disappear quickly, because you could explain it that the requirement for nevuah is to be mitzimcha. If a person's burdened with the burdens of the tzibur, they'll be atzevim. They'll be sad, or they'll be bogged down by those burdens. And for that reason, then the nevuah will stop because they won't be able to get to the state of mind in order to have the nevuah. Or if they are bogged down with the demands of the tzibur, they'll be so preoccupied with the demands of the tzibur that they won't have time for nevuah. Or by design, their nevuah has to manifest in different ways. One way is expressed is by helping the tzibur. The other way it's expressed is through nevuah. So if they are burdened with the tzibur and dealing with the tzibur, then the nevuah's manifestation will be in that venue and not through nevuah. So that's what it means here, that Yeshua is saying to Moshe, let's stop this nevuah, because by burdening them with the burdens of the tzibur, which contextually in the parsha over there is what they're discussing, that Moshe wants to relieve some of those burdens and place them on the people. And we just read in Parshat Devarim, it's exactly what Moshe says. I can't deal with all these burdens, and that's why he needed the extra help. How do we know that they have to be additional three? The mission discusses how do we get to the number of 23 for the Sanhedrin Haktana. The Gemara there says, Eda lahatzil, Eda l'ra'a. They give an Eda on each side. Each Eda is 10, so you have 20. And then you can't have a baked in shakul, makes it 21. But then we also needed you to be able to be mechayev by a majority of two. That for acquittals, it was enough to have a majority of one, but for incriminating and for executing individuals, you needed a majority of two. So that's how we ended up with 23. And now the Gemara asks the question, so, the ra'al pishnaim lo mishkachata. And then if you have a beit din of 23, you'll never have a situation in which you have two more. That is, because i'achadasar mezakin, u'shneimasar mechayvin. Either you have a situation in which 11 are trying to acquit or exonerate, and 11 are trying to incriminate or make him guilty. So then, akati chadu. Then you only have a majority of one. I asara mizakin u'shlosha asar mechayvin. Or the other possibility of getting a breakdown is that you have 13 that are saying he is guilty, and you have 10 that are saying that he is innocent. Tzlatavu, the spread's going to be 3. So you're either going to have 13 versus 10, or you're going to have 12 versus 11. You'll never have a case when you can have two more on one side of the situation, because 23 never allows for that to be a breakdown where you have an odd number, and there'll be two more to one side of the argument. So Amir Rabbeinu, Yata Motzel, we Mosifim et Divrei Hakol. The only way to get to a situation in which you have a majority of two is in a case where you add on additional Dayanim to the court. This relates to a Mishnah that we'll see later on, which is that if you have 11 individuals saying that he's guilty, 11 saying that he's innocent, and one says, Eini Yodea, I don't know. So there the Mishnah tells us you add on another two Dayanim on top. So the Eini Yodea falls away. He's completely disqualified from the cases we'll see in a second. And then you add on two. So in that case, you started with 11 versus 11, which is 22. You add on two, you end up with 24. So in this instance, you're going to end up with a Beit Din Shakul, an even Beit Din, and in that case, you can have a majority of two. So that's what it says. Bimosifin, it's a case where adding on judges because somebody opted out because of their Eini Yodea, or was disqualified because of their Eini Yodea. And now it's Divrei Hakol, that's according to everyone. Or the other option is, in the Sanhedrin HaGadol, according to Yehuda, where you only had 70 members. Since it's an even Beit Din, then you can't end up with the majority of two. Because he says there are only 70 members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, not 71. V'ami Rabbi Abba, Masifim osim Beit Din Shakul l'chatchila. When you add on judges, we allow or we make a Beit Din that is an even number intentionally. And even l'chatchila, pshita, the Gemara says, yeah, of course. That's what the Mishnah says later on. If you have one that says any of day and he's disqualified, you add on two. So that's what you're going to end up with, an even number. So No, we're going to say that the one who says any of day is still qualified to be a part of the case. And if he then has something to say that's of interest, whether to the guilty side or the innocent side, we would listen to him. One who says any Odea is disqualified completely. It's as if he doesn't exist there at all. And that is the Kamash Malan, that Iyamar Taima lo shaminin le. If he says something at this point, we won't listen to him anymore. And that's why it's not Pshita. We would have thought you add on two, and the any Odea still has a say in the matter. The Kamash Malan is that teaching us that when you add on two, you end up with an even number because the any Odea is eliminated completely. He's not in the case anymore. Amrav Kana Sanhedrin Shira'u Kulan Chuva Potrinoto. Any Sanhedrin who unanimously decides that the person is guilty, then we let him go. We release him. My Taima, Kevin de Gmire, since we have Alocha Lemoshe Misinai, the Alana Din, Lemabed Lezchuta, that you have to leave the din overnight. You need it to ferment overnight in order that someone might find something that would exonerate the individual or acquit the individual. The Hani Tulo Chazile. When they come to unanimous decision that this person is guilty, that means that the facts of the case are so obvious, oh, so incriminating, that the Beit Din basically off the bat says he's guilty across the board. Those individuals who see the facts in that way, or see the case in that way, they're never going to be able to find a zchut in his favor. And therefore then Halanat HaDin becomes meaningless, because they're going to wait overnight just to pronounce him guilty the next day, and they'll never find something in his favor. So we want a Beit Din that has a little more of an even-handed view of the situation in order that they could find something or possibly find something that would acquit him in the case. If they are so, I'm going to say biased here, not in the negative sense, but biased here because of the facts or the case to the guilty side, they'll never be able to see anything to the positive side on his behalf. Rav Yochanan, in Moshevim Misanedre, Ela Bale Koma, Bale Chuchma, Bale Mare, Bale Zikna, Ubale Kshafim, V'yodim Ba'ayin Lashon. So here you have all the requirements of the people that sit in the Sanhedrin. One is if they be of stature, but here it's of physical stature. Bale chuchma, they obviously have to be wise and have erudition. Bale mare, they have to be good-looking, handsome. Bale zikna, they have to have already reached a certain age where they have experience, life experience, which is relevant. Bale kshafim, that they have the ability to understand or counteract sorcery, and v'yodim b'ayin lashon, that they know the 70 languages. So Rashi points out over here, why do the physical traits of the Dayanim matter here? We're looking for people to adjudicate the halacha, for them to reach the emet, the truth in these cases. Why does it matter if they're big, tall, handsome? Why is that relevant at all? Rashi says over here, because of the necessity that the people fear the judges. So their physical presence and their good looks will also give them a certain amount of prestige with the people, and therefore the people will fear the members of the Sanhedrin, which is what we need. We need them to listen to the Sanhedrin, we need them to pay heed to the Sanhedrin, and therefore, Shetei Matan Mutelet Al Abriot, we also need these physical traits about them as well. Now, Bali Chuchma is self-evident why you need that. Balei Zikna also, life experience is important, not just the knowledge itself. Balei Shafim, as Rashi notes over here, is to kill sorcerers. These other sorcerers can't play tricks or overcome the Beit Din through their sorcery. So we need someone who can counteract that. And Yodimai Lashon, because Shalotehe Sanhedre Shomat Mipi HaMeturgaman. So that the Sanhedrin doesn't hear it through an interpreter. Because that is what we call aid Mipi aid. That's the equivalent of hearsay, which is that you're not hearing it directly from the aid, from the witness himself. You're hearing it through a medium. Medium happens to be another person or a translator over here. But we want the Beit to be able to listen to these individuals or the witnesses directly. And so therefore they need to know all the languages so that they can accept witnesses in any language. Obviously, shvatzim are tmeim in a Torah. So what it's saying here is only if you know or you can figure out a way to come up with the logic that would make sheretz tahor min haTorah, then you can be a member of the Sanhedrin. So it means it requires a certain amount of erudition, sharpness, and ability, in a sense, to go against the grain, which is the Torah tells you that the sheretz is tameh. And here you're coming up with a way to make the sheretz tahor. So that's a type of knowledge, a type of understanding, and depth of understanding, which we are looking for in a person who is a member of the Sanhedrin. And the Rabbeinu Tam says here, Rekash the Rabbeinu Tam, B'malanu b'charifut should have that the sheretz should be Torah. What do we need this type of worthless type of gilpul in order to have someone be chosen to be a member of the Sanhedrin? Although the Meiri does give an interesting answer, which is he connects it to the Gemara that we saw previously, which is when you have a Beit Din that has a unanimous decision that the individual is guilty, that we disband such a Beit Din. So what we're looking for are individuals who can see different perspective than everyone else. And so just like over here by a sheretz, even though we know it's tameh, they have the ability to see another perspective, so too by a case where we have an individual where everyone is unanimously moving in a certain direction, these individuals or this individual will have the ability to see it from a different perspective. And that's what we're looking for in this individual. Amar Rav, ani adon v'terenu. Rav says, let me give a crack at it and I'll tell you how to do that or how it is possible that a sheretz could be tahor. A snake which kills, and it expands the amount of tumah in the world. I mean, if it kills an animal, it creates more tumat nevela. If it kills a human being, then it creates tumat amet, tahor. Yet the nachash, the snake itself, is tahor. If you have a dead snake, the dead snake does not convey tumah. Sheretz, she'enu meimit, umarbe tumah. A sheretz, one of the eight shvatzim that is mentioned in the Torah, they're not necessarily killer types of rodents or animals, and so therefore they're not increasing tumah in the world. Enu din she'e tahor, then certainly it should be tahor. It doesn't add tumah to the world, so why should it itself be tameh? So that was his logic in terms of the kal v'chomer that would prove to you that there could be such a thing as a sheretz tahor. Gemara rejects it and says, Velohi, that logic has failed. Midah hava kotz ba'alma. It's no different than a needle or a thorn in general. If you have a splinter, a thorn, it can cause a lot of pain. It can kill someone, but yet it's not tameh. So there's no evidence by the fact that something can kill or something can increase tumah through the killing that that item itself should be tameh. We have evidence to the contrary where we have items that cause problems and nevertheless they themselves are not inherently tameh. So there you can't bring a proof from that kal v'chomer. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, kol ir she'ein ba shtayim ledaber v'echad lishmoa, ein meshuvin ba Sanhedrin. You don't have a city where you have two individuals who can speak the 70 languages and one who can understand it. Ein moshivim b'Sanhedrin. Then it doesn't qualify for a Sanhedrin haktana. Uve Beitar. In this time, in Beitar havu shlosha. There were actually three individuals. Uve Yavne arba'a. And in Yavne we had four individuals and the Gemara lists them now. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Akiva, Mishimon atan meni dan lifnehem bakarka. So you have three that were smuchim, both because of their age and their erudition and the fact that they were nismach. And then you have Shimon atemani, who doesn't have smicha, who is younger and is dan lifnehem bakarka. He's sitting on the ground in front of them because only the smuchim or the talmidei chachamim sat on the benches, the students sat on the floor. Shimon atemani, as a student and was a member of the Sanhedrin, he also was one of the four that understood or could speak all of the 70 languages. Meitave, is that really true what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav said over here? Shlishi, chokhmah. If you have three that can speak the 70 languages, that is a really wise Beit Din. Rivit, if you have four, ein lamala hemena. There's nothing but greater than a Beit Din like that. You're not going to find more than that in a single Beit Din. So now, the Braita seems to indicate you need a minimum of three that can speak the 70 languages. Not like Rivit Amar Rav, who said you need two to speak and one who understands. Huda Markiai Tana. Rav follows this Tana. The Tanya, you have a Braita, Shnia Chochma. If you have two individuals who can speak the 70 languages and one who can understand, that is Chochma, that's a wise Beit Din. Shlishit, if you have three that can speak the 70 languages, and Lamalei Menu. There's no better or greater Beit Din than that, and that we're not going to find more than that. So they're too bright, though, as to whether the standard is two that speak or three that speak in order to qualify for a Sanhedrin Akhtana. Now, we explained that the Ber and Lishmo, according to Rashi, who says that it references to the Shivim Lashon, the Rambam, on the other hand, believes that the Ber Lishmoa refers to the standard of erudition that you need in the members of the Sanhedrin, which is that you need individuals who, the Daber, are well-versed and can discuss any area of Torah and any issue that arises, and Lishmoa are individuals who, once explained to them, have familiarity or have the ability to understand that which is being explained to them. And so that would be the explanation of the Daber Lishmoa here, not the language issue. The other thing is that you have to then explain that if we allow the three individuals to be a proxy for the Beit Din to accept testimony, so either you have to suggest that the requirement of acceptance of testimony only requires three Dayanim, and then they can convey it to the 23. So the requirement of accepting a dude, Mipi Ayedim, is done by a Beit Din of three, which is a subset of the Beit Din of 23, and that suffices. You need a Beit Din of 23 to adjudicate, but the acceptance of testimony can be done by that subset of three. Or you have to argue, and this is what the Ramban al Torah says, that the acceptance of a dude, Shlomi Pierre Maturgaman, is only a din derabonon. And that din derabonon, they Rabbanon waived the need for 23 and said that you could use three in order to accept it on behalf of the Beit Din as a whole. Now, we're about to get here the equivalent of the Rosetta Stone. Gemara here is going to lay out a key for phrases that are used in the Gemara over the place without any definition. And over here you have the definitions of the items, which is Lemedim lifnei chachamim, those that learn before the chachamim. That references to Levi mi Rabbi. That refers to Levi who was learning by Rabbi or in front of Rabbi. Levi is a Tana, the end of the era of the Tanaim, and he's learning in front of his Rebbe who was Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So they termed him in the Gemara, Lemedim lifnei chachamim. So anytime you see that term, it's referencing to Levi. Danim lifnei chachamim, those that were done before the chachamim, meaning that he is a student that sits on the floor in front of the Chachamim. Those are Shimon ben Azai, Shimon ben Zoma, B'chanana Mitzri, B'chananya ben Hachinai. So those four individuals are known in the Gemara as Danim lifnei Chachamim. Nachum bar Yitzchak matnei chamisha. He says there are actually five. Shimon, Shimon, B'shimon. The three Shimons, two of them were mentioned previously, which is Shimon ben Azai and Shimon ben Zoma. The third one is Shimon HaTemani, who we just mentioned previously, was amongst the four individuals in Yavna that could speak the 70 languages. Chanan v'Chananya. Chanan is Chanan HaMitzri, v'Chananya is Chananya ben Chachinai. Rabotenu Shibavel. When we, Gemara uses the terminology, are rabbis in Bavel, Rav Ushmuel. That's a reference to Rav and Shmuel. Rabotenu Shibaretz Yisrael, are rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Abba. That's interesting over there, because here it uses a term in the plural, and so in Bavel it makes sense, because you're talking about two individuals, you're talking about Rav and Shmuel. In Eretz Yisrael it says Rabotenu Shvaretz Yisrael, and then only names one, which is Rabbi Abba. So that's interesting. Dayanei Gola, the Dayanim of the Gola, Karno. Karno, who is one of the preeminent judges. Although, interestingly enough, there's Bam in Baba Batra, has the Girsa over here, that the Dayanei de Gola were actually Karno and Shmuel. Dayanei de Eretz Yisrael, the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael is Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi. Dayanei de Pumpadita, the Dayanim of Pumpadita is Rav Papa bar Shmuel. Dayanei de Nahardo is Rav Ada bar Yiminyume. Sabe de Sura, the elders of Sura is Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Sabe de Pumpadita, the elders of Pumpadita is Rav Yehuda, Ravena. Charife de Pumpadita, the sharp ones of Pumpadita is Aifa and Rav Yime b'nei Rechava, the two sons of Rav Chava. Amorai de Pumpadita, the Amoraim in Pumpadita is Rabba v'Rav Yosef. Amorai de Nardai is Rav Chama. Nahar Balai Matnu. That terminology is used. That references to Rami Bar Rabi, or you can see here on the side that the Orach brings it as Rami Bar Bruche instead of Rami Bar Barabi. Amrei Bei Rav, though said over from the members of the Beit Midrash of Rav, that refers to Rav Huna. Rav says, can that really be? Don't we have a memra that says Vamar Rav Huna Amrei Bei Rav? Rav Huna is quoting the Bei Rav. So how could it be that that's Rav Huna if Rav Huna is quoting it? Ella Rav Hamnuna. It refers to Rav Hamnuna. The Bai does well deal with the issue that changing this over to Rav Hamnuna doesn't really help the situation out, because now you have Amar Rav Huna Amrei Bei Rav, which would be Rav Hamnuna. The problem is that Rav Hamnuna is a Talmud of Rav Chista, who's younger than Rav Huna. So then why would Rav Huna be quoting something from Rav Hamnuna? So the Rabbeinu Tam says that we're reading the Gemara wrong, and that when the Gemara says Ella Rav Hamnuna, it's not saying that the Bei Rav is Rav Hamnuna instead of Rav Huna. Rather, the statement that we see that says Amar Rav Huna Amrei Bei Rav, you should change that to read Amar Rav Hamnuna Amrei Bei Rav, and then Rav Hamnuna would be speaking the name of Rav Huna. So we don't change the fact that Amrei Bei Rav is Rav Huna, but rather we change the other memra, unlike what Rashi suggests over here, which is that they're actually rejecting Bei Rav being Rav Huna and saying that it should be Rav Hamnuna. Or you have to say what the Balei Tosafot say in many other places, which is there are two Rav Hamnunas. There's Rav Hamnuna as a Talmid of Rav Chista. There's also Rav Hamnuna that learned before Rav, and that's who Rav Huna was quoting over here. Amrei B'Marova, they say in the West, that means in Eretz Yisrael, that's a reference to Rabbi Yirmiya. Shalchu Mitam, they sent from over there, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. That references to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Michaku Ala B'Marova, they laughed at him, or they laughed at what he said in the West in Eretz Yisrael. That's Rabbi Elazar. V'ha, can you really say that? Right? Don't we have V'shachu Mitam L'divrei Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina? They sent from over there, according to Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Chanina. So now, you just told me before that Shachu Mitam is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. So how could it be that Shachu Mitam, that Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina sends that according to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina? Then he'd be speaking about himself. It doesn't make sense. Ela Ipuch. You have to flip those last two, which is Shachu Mitam, they sent from over there, Rabbi Elazar, Mechakula B'Marova is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. So we flip it. So that's the key to these phrases that you find, or these pronoun phrases that you find in the Shas. Here's the definition of who are the individuals behind these statements. Again, they, in the time of the Gemara, knew who they were speaking about. They were obviously contemporaries, or people who were known by that position. The problem is, later on, as we move away from the era in which these people live, it's very hard to know what was meant when you say the elders of Pumpedita, the Dayanim of Pumpedita. In their day, or in their heyday, or maybe a little before, a little afterwards, they were well known. But once you move farther away from that, they're not so well known. And that's what the Gemara does over here. It gives us the key to understanding what these phrases mean in the Gemara. Right now we're up to the last thing in the Mishnah, which is Kamiyei Be'ir Ve'iruyah L'Sanhedrin. How many members or residents of a city do you need in order to qualify to have a Sanhedrin in it? So the Tanakhama's view was Me'ah Ve'esrim. You need 120. Me'ah Ve'esrim, Ma'ivitayu. Why do you need 120 residents of the city? Esrim B'Shlosha K'neged Sanhedrin K'tana. You need 23 for the Sanhedrin Akhtana. V'shalosh Shirot Shel Esrim B'Shlosha. And you need 3 rows of 23, which are the Talmidim that are before the Sanhedrin. Harei Tishim V'Tarte. That gets you to some total of 92. In other words, 23 times 4. V'asara Batmanim Shel Beit HaKnesset. And you need the 10 people who are Batelmi Malacha, that don't do any work, who are always available to be in the Beit Knesset. The way Rashi terms it over here is that these asara batanim asara bnei adam b'teilim mikol melacha. They don't work. The mizumamin, the Beit Knesset shachrit v'arvit. They're ready and available to make a minyan for shachrit and arvit. Kedamina b'rachot, kevin shabak kodesh baruch hu the Beit Knesset, v'lo matzah sham asara. When Hashem comes to the Beit Knesset at the starting time of tefillah, he doesn't find 10 a minyan there. Miad koes, he gets upset. The kaimelon, the kokrach shein bo asara batanim nidon kefar. Any city that can't manage to have 10 individuals who are batnanim, then it has the status of a village and no longer a city. Hilkach, iletnehu, lo chazya l'sanhedrin. Therefore, if you don't have these individuals, then you're not going to have a Sanhedrin in that city. So the Rashi sees the asara batnanim as being available to make the minyan in the morning and the minyan at night, to be there on time because they're doing nothing but staying in the shul. Others view the asara batnanim more along the lines of what we would call kolo today, You obtain individuals who dedicate themselves to learning in the city, and they are batel from melacha in order to support the city with their Torah learning. Hare meyau tre. So now you have a sum total of 102. You had 92 already before. Now you had another 10. That's 102. Ushnei sofrim. Two stenographers. Shnei chazanim. Two sheriffs or bailiffs of the court. Ushnei bali dinim. Two litigants. Ushnei edim. Two witnesses. Ushnei zomamim. Two witnesses that can make the first witnesses into edim zomamim. Ushnei zomame zomamim. Another set of edim that could implicate the set of edim. What we want is fear here. We want edim, when they come to testify, be afraid that somebody could figure out what they did. With all these additions, you have another set of six pairs over here, because you had two stenographers, two sheriffs or bailiffs, two litigants, and two edim, and two zomamim, and two zomamim, zomamim. There's six additional pairs, which is 12. Harimeyav arbasa. That's 114 sum total. So now you have 114. We wanted to get to 120, which is what the Mishnah says, or the Tanakhama says. Batanya kol ir shein ba'asarat dvarim alalu. Any city that does not contain these 10 items, ein talmidei chacham rashai ledor b'tocha. Talmid chacham shouldn't live in a city because it's missing essential services or infrastructure for the city. Beitin makin bonshin. One of those essential services that you have a beitin that takes care of the matters of the city and punishes people who don't comply. Kupah shel tzedaka. You need to have a communal charity, nigvet b'shtayim, that is collected with two, umit collected b'shlosha, it's distributed by three, ubeit knesset, you need a shul, beit ha-merchatz, a bathhouse, beit ha-kisei, a bathroom, outhouse, rofe, a doctor, uman, a bloodletter, velavlar, and a sofer, and a scribe, tabach, a butcher, umlamei tinokot, and someone who teaches the children. So these are all individuals that you must have in a city, or necessities of the city, and therefore they should be counted towards the 120. Obviously, here we have 114 members of the city, we only need six more. And yet over here you say Vasarat Varim. So obviously it's not all 10 of these individuals are going to be counted towards that. If you look in the Rabbeinu Hanan on the second to this line, he says, so Sibaleim Vav, add another six individuals. These are individuals which are Tabach, a butcher, Rofe, is a medical doctor. The way Rashi reads it is that it's someone who can perform a brit milah or mohel. Uman is a bloodletter. Lavlar is a sofer. Umlamei tinokot, and someone who teaches the children. So Rabbeinu Hanano enumerates these as being the six additional individuals that we have. He's not counting the Beit Din or the Kupot Shel Tzedaka, because those aren't incremental individuals to the city. Those are services that can be performed by individuals who are already in the city. Beit Din we already saw, because that was counted in the 23. And Kupot Shel Tzedaka will be under the auspices of either the Beit Din or someone who we already mentioned, like the Asarat Bat Mananim that we saw before. And you can see in Rashi's count over here, Ha-Cheshvin Leo Dika Sanhedrin Govin Mechalkin Avalahu Chamisha Mishita. Those are five of the six. The Rashi says it's the collectors of the tzedakah and the distributors of the tzedakah are the additional five out of the six. And then Rofe V'uman V'lavlar Mamed Chad Gavra Havi L'chol Hani. One guy performs all of those services, so he's a pretty versatile individual. He's able to do all of these things. There is a common denominator between some of them, which is a rofe and an uman, a doctor and a bloodletter might be connected. A lavlar and a malamei tinokot also might be connected, but here Rashi connects all four of them, that you have to be a jack of all trades, and that's how we get the additional six. So Rashi's count of six is a little different than Rabbeinu Hananel's count of six. Or by doubling up some of the occupations, not like Rashi puts it all into one person, but some things like the Rofe and the Uman and the Lavlar and the Mlamei Tinokot, as well as counting the Gabayei Tzedakah that the three individuals who distribute are also comprised of the two that collect. And so therefore it's not five there, but rather three. And we know already from the Gemara of Baba Batra that the necessity for two and three is we need two because of Nemanut to collect, and you need three to distribute because it requires an assessment of the person's needs, as well as the value of what we're distributing amongst different people, which involves somewhat of a din or adjudication. Yishum Rav Ukva Amar, Af Minei Peira. You need different types of fruit. Mipnei Shminei Peira Meirin Tainayim. Because different fruits or available fruits are things that help out the eyes and make a person, whether it's healthier or more radiant. So those are also things that you would see as a basic necessity of the city. Rav Nechemi Omer, Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Matayim, Vishivim, Vishiva. You need 200 and 77. V'atan, you don't have a break to Rabbi Omer, matayim b'shivim u'shmona. You need 278. Lokasha, hi Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbonon. The difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbonon as to whether there where the Sanhedrin has 70 or has 71 in it. You could say, and Rashi explains, matayim v'shloshim k'Rabbi Nechemia. They believe you need 230 like Rabbi Nechemia. V'od mem zayin, and then another 47 on top of that. Shemid chalku beitin, if beitin divides along the lines of Yulav's Mizakim, Vecharasai Mechaibin, they come to a hung beitin. They have 11 on each side, Vecharomer in Yudea, Yusifu Me'elu Mem Zayin. They'll add on another 47 until they reach 70, because that's the maximum amount that you're going to go to, is to the equivalent size of the Sanhedrin Gedola. So that's the additional 47, plus Rabbi Nechemia in the Mishnah already has the base number of Matayim Mushloshim, 230. And if you remember, in the Mishnah, Nechemia says you need a minimum of 230, because the lowest form of Srera that we found is Sarei Asarot, 1 to 10. And if you have a Beit Din of 23 with a ratio of 1 to 10, then you need a minimum of 230 residents to justify a Beit Din of 23, which would then give you that ratio of 1 to 10, which is the minimum ratio you need for individuals to be leaders or to have a position of power in the city. So therefore, his minimum is 230. And then Rabbi adds on top of that either 47 or 48, depending on whether you hold like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda, as to the maximum number of members of the Sanhedrin, whether it's 70 or 71. All right, now, Tan Rabbanan. B'samta alehem sarei alafim, sarei meot, sarei chamishim, sarei asarot. So those are, according to Yitro, these are the number of judges that you should add in order to support you. You have one for 1,000, one for 100, one for 50, and one for asarot. Sarei alafim, to have one per 1,000, shesh meot, you would have 600. If you have 600,000 people, then you would need 600 judges to be 1 to 1,000. Sarei meot, to have 1 to 100, Sheshed Alafim, you need 6,000. For every 100 to have one judge, you need 6,000 for 600,000 people. Sarei Chamishim, to have one for each 50, you would have to have Shnei Masarelef. You'd have to have 12,000, because 12,000 times 50 is 600,000. Sarei Asarot, you would have to have Sheshed Ribot. You would have to have 60,000. One to every 10 would be 60,000 for a grouping of 600,000. Nintzu Dayanei Yisrael, now you figure out, based on this mathematics, that the Dani Yisrael are Shivim Ribo, Ushmonat Alafim, B'sheish Meot. So it's 78,000 and 600. And that's done by adding up the numbers that we just did. You have the, you had 60,000, 12,000, which is 72,000, 6,000, which is 78,000, and then you had 600, which is 78,000 and 600. So Tosfot is a little puzzled by the math over here, because he says that if you take out those individuals who are ready to pick to be judges, and you eliminate them from the number, then the next number would be smaller. So for instance, if you start out with 600,000, you say, Sarei Alafim, which is 1 per 1,000, then you have 600. If you take 600,000 minus 600, then you would make the calculation of the Sarei Meot. So instead of getting the 6,000 you got the Sarei Meot, you would get 5,994. And so on and so forth, you would get a smaller number each time because you've already taken out certain individuals already classified as Sarim or Shuftim. Those would suggest that maybe the Zkenim, or the ones that were picked here to be the Sarim, were over the age of 60. So they were not included in the census of the 600,000, but then as they were picked as judges or Sarim over here, they are members of Klal Yisrael, but not members that are counted within the 600,000. That makes the assumption that the count was only from 20 to 60 and not just above the age of 20. And again, that the number 600,000 somehow is an exact number, even though in the Torah it seems to be given as an approximate number, not an exact number, because we see later on in the census that they come to exact numbers that are close to 600,000, but not exactly 600,000. Tosfot then offers another possibility, Yesh Mefarshim, that the calculation over here is not necessarily cumulative, but rather, you start it the other way around. You start from a Sarei Asarot, which means that you start by picking out 1 to 10, and then that will lead you to 60,000. Out of those 60,000, then you pick the Sarei Chamishim. So the next level of Srara actually was chosen out of the level that was before. And so then, out of those 60,000, you pick best 12,000 to be the Sarei Chamishim. And then out of those 12,000 for the Sarei Meot, you would pick the best 6,000. And then for the Sarei Alafim, out of those 6,000, you'd pick the best 600. So then again, it would be a number that, as even though you're adding it up here, that's a number of sarim that you have as you do the calculation, but it would not be a cumulative accumulation because this sarara, or the judges, would be picked out of the judges that were already chosen for the previous level of sarara. And then the 78,600 number would just be a theoretical cumulative number. Okay, with that, we finish the first perek. Hadron Alach, Dinei Memonot.